Michael Parker and D Program on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the Michael Parker Show. I am joined by Zen Honeycutt today. She's the founding executive director of Moms Across America. This is Owen Stevens, by the way, filling in for Michael Parker. The executive director of Moms Across America, Zen Honeycutt, a nonprofit national coalition of unstoppable moms. I absolutely love that. Zen, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, Owen. It's great to be talking with you, and I'm glad to be on the Michael Parker Show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very excited to have you on. Talk a little bit about Moms for America and the book that you decided to write, which is, let me just get that, it's Unstoppable. I'm so excited to read. I'm so excited to learn more about the organization. What led you to founding Moms Across America and then to writing this book?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, just want to clarify, it's Moms Across America. There's a different organization.
Moms Across America.
Moms Across America, there's a different organization called Moms for America. So we are a separate organization. And I started Moms Across America, over 10 years ago now. And that was because my children were sick. And I learned about GMOs and eventually glyphosate in the food supply from people like Robin O'Brien and Jeffrey Smith and Don Huber and Howard Vligor, you know, farmers and soil scientists and researchers. And I was mad. I have to say, I felt deeply betrayed by the government that they were putting genetically modified foods in our food system without being labeled, that there were inherent risks, and that our children were sick, and they had no explanation for what was going on. I mean, my kids had allergies, autism symptoms, autoimmune issues, asthma, name it, they had it. And many other of my friends, almost all of my friends, had children with some of the same issues. And we were like, what is going on here? Our kids are allergic to apples, to pepper, to strawberries, to, you know, wheat, eggs, dairy, nuts, all kinds of, you know, every eggs, everything. And it was a real struggle. And for the longest time, many of us moms just thought, oh, well, we just have to deal with this. We just have to avoid nuts at a birthday party, which is not easy when you have a two-year-old and there's cookies on the table with, you know, chocolate chip cookies with walnuts in them. Then they end up vomiting or going to the hospital. You know, it's very scary. So for the longest time, we just tried to deal with it and put up with it. Mm-hmm. But at one point, my son was sitting at the breakfast table and he said he had this red rash around his mouth. He was about 8 years old. And this is the one that had almost died from a pecan in the Thanksgiving stuffing on Thanksgiving evening. He later on, when he was five, when he was eight, he said, had this rash around his mouth. And he said, Mom, you know, I really wish all my allergies would go away. And I said, yeah, me too, buddy. But in my mind, I was saying that's never going to happen because the doctors had told me his allergies were only going to get worse. But then I realized what I was saying in my head. That's very disempowering, right? That's never going to happen. It's just like, there's no possibility there. There's no solution. So I thought, wait a second, I'm not committed to that. What if there is a chance that we could turn this around? And I thought about my friend Sarah, who had gone gluten-free for a year, and she was then able to eat a slice of pizza at a birthday party or a piece of, you know, wedding cake at a wedding. And I reminded my son of that. And I said, would you be willing to be my partner in your health? First I asked, would you like to, you know, eat a slice of pizza at a birthday party someday? And he said, yes. And then I said, would you be willing to be my partner in your health? Would you drink green drinks and do alternative solutions like acupuncture and Chinese herbs and all that stuff? And he thought about it very seriously. And he was 8 or maybe 9 years old. And at the time, I think he was nine, he said, yes, I will do that. And I said, okay, then I promise you, you will get better. And that journey is what I cover in the book Unstoppable, transforming sickness and struggle into triumph, empowerment, and a celebration of community. And not just about my son, but about a whole community of people who are dealing with these problems and their betrayal of that the government has perpetrated on us, and the chemical companies and Monsanto and the scientists that are being paid off, and how to talk to your family and friends about GMOs. It's, you know, it's really like an activist playbook, but a personal story and a history on the food supply all in one.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I myself have a little bit of experience with this. When my mom was pregnant with my brother, we live right next to a farm, and the farmer was, you know, he was spraying his chemicals right on the farm. And it was right around the time that my mom was pregnant with my brother. And, you know, the fumes had spread right in to our own yard. I mean, it was horrible. It was, the stench was disgusting. We had to close our windows and stay inside. And my brother was born with an ear that was deformed, and he was born, you know, deaf in one ear. You know, we believe strongly that these chemicals played some role in that birth defect. What have you heard anything? You know, do you talk about birth defects, the effects of these pesticides, even in the food, but just being sprayed in the air?
Oh, absolutely. I have spent considerable amount of time with scientists and doctors and researchers in person who have talked about these issues. For instance, I went to a food safety conference in Beijing. I was one of 30 experts that was, you know, invited to be there from 15 different countries, and one from Argentina. I believe his last name is Fernando. First name is Fernando, but I'm sorry. He's a Argentinian doctor who has treated thousands of children and babies who live near the fields, the GMO crop fields that have been sprayed with glyphosate and other toxic chemicals in Argentina. And he has essentially proven, you know, that atrazine and glyphosate, the top two pesticides or herbicides, are causing birth defects. And so absolutely, there's all kinds of birth defects, anencephaly, the condition where the intestines are born outside of the body, that's happening. It's 10 times higher in Hawaii than in any other place in North America, as far as they know. And Hawaii is a hotbed for GMOs and spraying. They spray 19 times a day in some of those fields. And that blows over to the apartment complexes right nearby. You know, those mothers are being exposed. Those babies are being exposed. So absolutely, I wouldn't doubt that for a second. I'm very sorry to hear that for your brother.
Oh yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's what he has to live with, and it's obviously terrible, but you know, his quality of life is good. He's rejoicing in it. And he's only ever known that, you know, and to us, it's what makes him unique. It's what makes him different. But as far as, I'm really interested in holding people accountable to solve problems, right? We want a generation of problem solvers, not problem creators. One of the things that I noted, we had some technical difficulties earlier, but what I was talking about in the beginning, I don't think anybody even heard it because we had some problems with the connection. But I think that our universities are pumping out a bunch of students who are going to be problem creators for our generation, right? Generation Z right now, 20.5% of this generation identifies as LGBTQ, and there's no shortage of issues. I mean, a rise in depression, anxiety, and suicide. That's all coinciding with this Marxist push in schools. And, you know, the problems are endless, right? And these kids, they don't know how to diet. They don't know how to eat properly. They don't know much about, you know, adequate nutrition. And obesity is something that's being pushed as socially acceptable. These things, these unhealthy lifestyles, vaping,
and they don't
instance,
know. Yeah, they don't know that what they're eating is there are endocrine disrupting chemicals. There's over 1,200 endocrine disrupting chemicals allowed here in the United States, and only three allowed in certain countries in Europe. And when I say endocrine disrupting, what I mean are hormone disrupting chemicals that disrupt your sex hormones, your reproductive organs, your mood, your ability to be satiated. Like if you don't have enough serotonin in your gut because glyphosate's destroying your beneficial gut bacteria, you're not going to feel content. You're not going to feel satiated. You're going to keep watching porn. You're going to keep drinking. You're going to keep doing whatever obsessive behavior that is. We're creating a nation of addicts because they don't have the serotonin in their body to say, okay, I've had enough. We're creating a nation of sleepless people who have bipolar disorder because they can't sleep at night because they don't have enough melatonin in their guts, because glyphosate is destroying that, all of the many of the bacteria in the gut, which harbors and stores or maybe even produces these hormones that are essential for our bodily function. I'm not a doctor, but this is what the research is showing. There are numerous studies showing that glyphosate destroys beneficial gut bacteria and allows for the proliferation of pathogenic gut bacteria. And that is extremely problematic because that pathogenic gut bacteria signals the brain to go on attack. And when the brain, the autoimmune cells in the brain, the amygdala is not amygdala. I'm sorry, there's one other name for it, but the cells in the brain go on attack. They create something called excitotoxin, and that creates excitement for the brain neurons. And then they, you know, get inflamed and then they die. So then you've got brain neurons that are no longer connecting. And for instance, you know, children with autism that have, they don't know, no longer make eye contact, right? You've got behavioral issues that happen, think memory loss that happens. So the bad bacteria in the gut is incredibly problematic. And if you start altering what you eat and give your body a chance to heal, you're going to start sleeping better, feeling better, have less depression. And that less and that depression can drive you to, you know, all kinds of other behaviors that are harmful for you and more problematic, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I want to go back to one thing you said that I think is I love to address this when, you know, right now we live in a nation where the doctors are claiming that everybody who is not a doctor needs to be quiet and that their opinion does not matter because they do not have a degree. Well, that degree and everything that it stands for does not mean anything when you guys are lying to the American people about things that are not good for them. And just because we're not doctors, right? Like, I don't need to be a doctor to know what's healthy for my body or for my families. I don't need a doctor to know that this vaccine is not something that I or anybody that I love wants to take in their best interest. I don't need to be a doctor to understand that I don't need to wear a mask to prevent myself from dying from a disease that I am not at risk of dying of, right? But every single doctor with their fancy schmancy degree will get up there and wear a mask, wear a face shield. I went into a visit to an ER, and I go in for, not to an ER, to a urgent care, just for a random other issue. And I go inside to get treated, and the doctor comes in with two masks on, a face shield, gloves, and like a little vial of hand sanitizer, like he's somehow battling Ebola. And I'm like, this is insane. That's nuts. You only have to go to college to be this stupid. And like, it's annoying because if you are an ordinary citizen, you have everything at your fingertips. You can look up anything, literally anything you want. One of the blessings of the internet is that it provides us a way to learn like never before. So stop watching YouTube.
I have teenage sons. I have 19 and 17-year-old sons, and they're like, Mom, I can learn faster from watching YouTube videos and researching online than I can sitting in a classroom. Exactly. So, you know, we're really struggling with this whole college idea. They are going, one's going to community college, one's going to be going to a local, you know, state college to see, you know, what that's all about and if it's going to be useful to them. But we're not paying the hundreds of thousands of dollars that it takes to go to some top tier college and have them be just brainwashed. Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't be brainwashed. They would be challenging the system and they would be the ones speaking up. And, you know, like in my son, when he was in Future Farmers of America and they started, you know, going on and on about the benefits of GMOs, he spoke up about organic food, and the instructor actually said, well, maybe you should be teaching the class. You know, like he did, he spoke up. But, you know, do I really want to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for them to be taught a bunch of malarkey and just have them sit in class and be bored and pissed off? You know, I don't think so. So, you know, they're right now they're supplementing their education. When my eldest son, the one that almost died, you know, on Thanksgiving evening, he went and became an organic whole food plant-based diet. He did a talk at his school when he was 9 years old about food, that, you know, how the bad food makes you feel and how the good food makes you feel. He got a citizen award. And he's now on his way to being a speaker and a nutritional scientist. And he's been reading books about food since he was 14. He's been educating himself. You know, he's been watching the YouTube videos. He's been reading the studies. And I couldn't be prouder of him. That's what learning is. When you seek out what it is that you want to know. And that's why it's so important that we do know what's going on in the news, though. We do have to keep abreast of it. If I can let everybody know about this People's Garden baloney that's going on. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, actually, we have to go to break. I know we got a late start, everybody. Okay. I apologize. We were dealing with some technical difficulties earlier, but we are going to get right back with Zen. Honeygut, Zen, do not lose that thought. We'll be right back after the break, everybody.
TNT Radio's Trish Wood.
Helen Joyce, who's written a book on a subject that I think now bedevils us all. How did extreme transism happen so quickly? It sometimes feels like the emperor's new clothes for us. You know, people are kind of going along because everybody else is, but our nervous systems are on red alert because we know something's terribly wrong.
I think like everybody else, I probably started from the unspoken assumption or the unexamined assumption that this was Gay Rights Mark II, that it was the latest in a series of, social liberation movements that you could go back even, you know, to women's liberation, to or even further, like to the end of slavery, women's liberation, black liberation, gay rights, and now it was trans rights. They're poor analogies because what's being demanded of us isn't what was being demanded 10 or 20 years ago by trans rights activists. 10 or 20 years ago, they were looking for accommodation, sympathy, support for a very strange but very human experience. Now they're asking all of us, or telling all of us, in fact, that we must understand the whole of humanity differently than the way we did before. All of us are meant to understand ourselves as not of our biological sex, but of a sort of innate gender identity. And you're not meant to talk about it.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches, and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in racism.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice. It has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
Government couldn't stop a flu-like virus. And now they want you to believe they can stop the Earth's climate from changing? The voice of reason is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Michael Parker Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens. I'm joined by Zen Honeycutt. She's the founding executive director of Moms Across America. We're talking about GMOs. We're talking about the genetically modified food and the bad habits of our youth that are not going to lead to anything good. None of this is good. When we talk about solutions, then what I want to talk about is what we can do to raise awareness for these genetically modified, plants that we're sticking into our body. Is it just plants? Is it meat as well? How far and how extensive is this issue?
So there's all kinds of GMOs. They're primarily plants. And just yesterday, they announced they're putting out a purple GMO tomato. And, they've already got a pink pineapple. We've got potatoes and apples that don't brown. Keep in mind, they're still rotting. You just don't see the browning. The browning is being masked, right? So they'll still smell like they're rotten, but they just won't look like it. And so those are all the desired trait type GMOs. They're like the salmon. There's salmon that grows four times fatter, four times faster, and is sterile. And that's an aqua bounty salmon. And that came out in the United States during COVID. And they blame COVID for the restaurants not wanting to take these salmon. So what they did was they stuck them to the homeless people in Philadelphia. 54,000 pounds of them just got,
oh my gosh,
homeless people got that GMO salmon. Yeah. So there are desired trait GMOs. And then there's GMOs where they have the pesticide built right in so that the bug eats it. It get the toxin gets in its stomach and the stomach explodes. You can imagine what that's doing to our kids. And then there's the GMO that's genetically engineered to resist Roundup primarily and other toxic chemicals. And so that's why we went after glyphosate, or, you know, AKA Roundup, because 80% of GMOs are engineered to withstand Roundup. So we have gone after that full force. Moms Across America initiated the first glyphosate testing that was citizen funded in America on urine, tap water, and breast milk. And we have, you know, just gone after glyphosate like a dog on a bone. And a lot of policy changes happen. 60 different countries have either revoked or restricted the use of glyphosate. You know, mm-hmm. the Monsanto lawsuits happen primarily because of grassroots, you know, raising awareness about that. And Costco stopped selling Roundup. So we've made a lot of progress. We need to have more. We are progressing now into the Neighborhood Food Network, which is a solution-based focus. It's all about building national food security one street at a time. And what we were surprised to see is that the USDA government recently just launched a program very similar to ours, but they want everybody to register their gardens. They want to know where your garden is, what your name is. Yes. And it's called the People's Garden. So they want community gardens to be registered with the USDA government. And then they'll give you a nice little sign and they'll put your garden on the map. If you go to the People's Garden .org, I believe it is. Let me see. USDA.gov. It is the People's USDA.gov/People's Garden. You can find out more about that and see if you want to let the U.S. government know where your community garden is. The only restriction they have is that you can't be growing marijuana on it. And so they need assurance of that. And if it's on federal property, then they need you to fill out forms telling them exactly how many pounds of produce that you have grown and where you want to donate it to. Now, I know from being a part of, you know, writing grants and trying to get money, that the people who give out the money want to know where their money is going and how successful it is. So they absolutely want to know how many gardens, you know, how many pounds of food. Those are measures of success that make sense. But everybody who hears about this is like, why would I want to tell the US government about my community garden? And that therein lies the problem. We have a crisis in trust with our own government such that we can't trust them to know where and when we're growing food. That's a problem, folks.
That's horrible.
And that comes from people seeing things like Farmageddon and, you know, movies where that show that the USDA comes in and just destroys a goat milk farm because they're selling raw goat milk. Because God forbid somebody gets sick off of some bacteria, even though we've been drinking raw goat milk for thousands of years. You know, so the USDA doesn't always have our best interest at heart. And that's why there's mistrust going on. So you got to keep your ear to the ground. You've got to keep sharing with people, listening to podcasts like this, keep sharing them with people to know what's really going on out there. And yes, to foster a healthy skepticism regarding what the government is doing and how they're getting their mitts into your business. I mean, it's just that I'm not interested in telling the U.S. government where my community garden is. But, you know, you can do what you want. The other thing I want to share is I'm very glad to share there's some good news. A Supreme Court has deemed that the QR codes, you know, those little QR codes that you scan to say that GMOs are in that product is actually unlawful, that they're not sufficient. So the US court has deemed QR codes unlawful. This is a big win for us. Wow. Some people have been fighting. We've been fighting to get GMOs labeled for 10 years. Other people have been fighting for 20 years. This is a huge win. And we don't know exactly what they'll have to say. The Supreme Court just said you have to go back and make it more sufficient, which is really vague and ridiculous. But I think that's all the courts can do. They can just say, you know, this is insufficient. So,
yeah.
So that, you know, so there is some progress. There are some things happening in the right direction.
Well, that's great to hear. We're going to go to the news right now, everybody. Thank you, Zen, for coming on. That is Zen Honeycutt, everybody. And we are going to get to the news right now. We will be back after a short news break.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines.
Greek Foreign Minister Dendias says he's concerned over his country's relations with neighboring Turkey, which has repeatedly threatened its NATO ally in recent weeks. Der Spiegel posted an op-ed article attacking Queen Elizabeth for not taking action to stop Britain from leaving the European Union. A trial opened Monday for Cardinal Joseph Zen, charged under Hong Kong's draconian national security law for a support of pro-democracy protests in 2019.
It's never a burden to fight for truth.
Lighting the fuse for freedom.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Parker Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens. Very excited to be with you guys. We are joined by Adam Lowe. Adam Lowe is one of the leading experts in public corruption in Los Angeles. He is a partner in the citizens advocacy company, the A-Team Advocacy Group, to work with whistleblowers of public corruption. Lowe has a unique style of analyzing allegations of public corruption that has led to criminal investigations of prominent elected officials and government agencies. Adam Lowe, how are you today?
Doing great, Owen. Doing great. How are you?
Very good. Very grateful to have you on. I've talked about Los Angeles, it seems like a ton. In the last week, I've had CeCe Woods. I've had a bunch of police officers on. You know, they're talking about Los Angeles. It sounds as if it's like a dystopian future in some way. It's crazy to see what's going on there.
Yeah, and it would surprise, a lot of people to know there's not a ton of corruption going on from the standpoint that there's not a million corrupt things going on. But what is happening is that we have a series of corrupt politicians, and it's one after another after another, and it's all linked together. So let me give you an example of that. As we know, there were raids done on LA Metro today or last week. There were Sheila Kuehl, Pizza for Violence CEO, Patty Giggins, and Max Huntsman. Well, of course, a lot of that comes from emails and communications that we received from Patty and from other people showing the public corruption. But the other person who was on that public, those emails where Sheila Kuehl's office was pushing solicitor's contracts, was a guy named Dan Rodman. And Dan Rodman is the transportation deputy for Eric Garcetti. So, you know, when we look at all the corruption together, much of it is tied together. There's a link. So, you know, now we have Philip Washington trying to be confirmed as the FAA administrator. We have Eric Garcetti trying to be confirmed as the ambassador to India, and we have all of this public corruption around this organization called Peace Over Violence that basically indicts both of them. So, it's all around and it's all interconnected. And, you know, the sad part is that it's the people here in the United States, the people here in Los Angeles, who are the ones who really suffer, especially when you're talking about a guy like Phil Washington. You know, Phil Washington was, caught basically doing sweetheart contracts. And, so here in Los Angeles, well, that's, a smaller thing than when you're doing sweetheart contracts with the FAA. And you have thousands of planes in the air, both domestic and international, flying through U.S. airspace. And you have a guy who, has a history of pay-to-play there's allegations of pay-to-play. And, I always, now if Phil gets confirmed, every time I put my kids on a plane, I'm going to wonder what substandard contract he put in because he got a little on the back end or he got some special political favor. Did he put the fifth best air traffic control system in, or did he put the best air traffic control system in? And, those are things we don't think about, but, when we just did the 21st anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attack. And, you know, we all know the devastation that is caused when an airplane or a group of airplanes go awry and something happens. And, you know, so, you know, this is a really dangerous, a very dangerous situation for the American people. You know, there are so many people who could fill that position. Why President Biden would choose a individual who's knee deep in a public corruption scandal is beyond me. And what's even worse is that when Phil Washington left Denver to come to LA, he was also in the middle of a public corruption scandal. Every time he leaves an agency, he leaves it in the middle of a public corruption scandal. So, you know, I'm a little disappointed in the president that he couldn't find any other person with the qualifications to run the airport or to run the FAA. And also keep in mind, Phil has just over a year of experience in aviation. So he's not even the best candidate for this job based on experience.
Yeah. So why do you think it was that he was chosen?
He ran the transition for the Biden administration for transportation. And I think at the time, well, I don't think, I know at the time, there were FBI investigations going on. This criminal investigation was going on. And I really think what happened, and this is just my opinion, is that he couldn't pass the FBI background check. It's simply, he couldn't get vetted to a point where the FBI felt comfortable and the Secret Service felt comfortable to give him that transportation secretary position. Then he came back to Los Angeles, and you know, the news of all of the things that people were looking at him for and law enforcement was looking at him for had really been distributed to public transportation throughout the United States and North America. So I don't think Phil could get a job. Nobody wanted, you know, a two-time, you know, federal investigation nominee running their right. transit system. Nobody wanted that mess. So really what I think happened was the president couldn't give him a cabinet position. And so Michael Hancock, the mayor of Denver, said, hey, let's direct appoint this guy and he can become the DIA person, the DIA CEO, and then he can go to the FAA and he can get his federal appointment. And I think that was a deal with the Biden administration. And that's sort of how this played out. But, you know, Phil Washington has a big problem, and that it's that my firm has 20,000 pages of information related to his right. Shortcomings as an administrator and his criminal activity. And so I don't think he's going anywhere. I think that as things progress, because I know quite a bit more than what has been actually publicly released by law enforcement, I think by the time we get done with this in a year or so, or a year and a half, I think he will not be the CEO of DIA, and I certainly don't think he'll be the FAA administrator. I think he'll be sitting in the unemployment line with Eric Garcetti. So, you know, I think that's kind of how it's going to be. And, you know, again, I'm super surprised that the Biden chose it. You know, the other thing, there's another factor in this, is that, you know, LA is the hub of public corruption here in the United States. And we have Jose Huizar, who was an LA city councilman, who was just indicted and is currently facing criminal charges and criminal trial by the feds. Then we have Mark Ridley Thomas, who is an African-American gentleman who is facing 20 counts of bribery with the former head of USC, who just actually pled guilty. But, and so we have a black man, we have a brown man that the FBI is all over. But the two rich white women, Patty Giggins and Sheila Kuehl, somehow they're getting a get out of free jail card. And, you know, it really shows the level of systematic racism, cultural bias that is living well and flourishing both in the Department of Justice and in the Biden White House. And I think, you know, he doesn't find the best people And he, you know, I think there's some questions of racism that the president is going to have to address, because what it looks like to me is the FBI is targeting black and brown people and letting white people go free. Now, as a white person, you know, who works in South LA and Compton and in Watts, you know, I see every day what the underserved communities face. And with the Biden administration, again, attacking black and brown people, it's troubling. And I think Joe Biden and Kamala Harris better come up with an answer as to why they're not at least having the FBI investigate Sheila Kuehl and Patty Giggins. It's troubling. And it should be troubling to Black Lives Matter. And it should be troubling to the rest of the community, the black and brown communities.
Yeah, I think that's right. We are going to be right back right after a short break.
The Great Food Reset has arrived. School kids munch on insects and a large psychop, brought to you by the government.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
1,000 Australian schools have provided insect snacks to school children to help save the planet from global warming.
Yeah. Adelaide, what do you think of the chips? They're yum. Chips are great, aren't they? And these chips are even better because they think they're better for you. Did you know that? Yeah, that way, you know, mum and dad might let you have more chips. Good stuff.
Make no mistake, this is the global agenda, ending meat eating and driving insects as the replacement for that protein. And they're going after your kids. That was an announcer promoting this propaganda to get kids to go home and pester their parents to start eating more bugs. The Great Food Reset is upon us. We must reject the food reset. This is Mark Morano on TNT Radio for the Morano Minute.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
Brian Stelter and Liz Cheney gone in the same week.
And that's just the start of draining the entire swamp.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Michael Parker Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens. I'm joined by Adam Lowe, one of the leading experts in public corruption in Los Angeles. Discussing the topic of public corruption and Los Angeles in the same sentence, it makes me think of one person, George Gascon. Have you focused on, you know, George Gascon at all, any of his policies that trouble you as far as Los Angeles is concerned?
Well, you know, George Gascon is an interesting guy. Early on in the first recall, I was fairly active in that recall, promoting the recall of Gascon. And then when the problem with being a public corruption guy is that when you start to see the things that are going on, you know, you kind of need to address them. And you know, there was quite a bit of mystery going on with the way the money was spent and things like that. So actually, I was one of the people who helped bring that first one to an end. The second recall I didn't get involved in. You know, look, here's my thought on Gascon. He's got a lot of really terrible policies, terrible, terrible policies. But there are some policies that I do agree with. I think that prison for a nonviolent offender who's under 18 is got to be the last resort. And the reason I feel that way is because, again, I do a lot of work in Watson and Compton and in really underserved communities. And once you put kids into the system, they never come out the same. And so I think that there's a lot of other ways to correct that behavior, rather than putting him into the criminal justice system. But, you know, I'll tell you something about the recalls. And, you know, this is my thought. You know, we had a DA, John Hatami, who was very, very vocal about George Gascon, and he continues to be. And what he would do, and what they would do is they would go stand out in front of a Walmart, right? And they would ask you to sign the petition. And it was very unprofessional, the way the recall was run. But, you know, I used to ask them, I'm like, why should I recall George Gascon? Now, for full disclosure, within the scope of even this corruption case, I have corresponded with George Gascon, you know, he and I back and forth related to this actually in particular corruption case and one involving another entity. But you know, these pollsters would go out there and they would say, hey, the reason you should recall George Gascon is because you can steal $900 worth of stuff out of this store and you can't get prosecuted. And, you know, and we have the most educated, the recall of George Gascon gave us the most educated criminals in the country about what they can do and how much they can steal without getting prosecuted. And, you know, to do that, I think it's caused a lot of problems for us as a city. I mean, before I met the recall, I didn't know about, you know, the $950 limit. And I'm pretty, you know, I don't deal with issues that are $950. I deal with $950 million. But, you know, you can't educate, criminals on how to break the law. And I think that, you know, and this is just my opinion, but guys like John Hatami did that. That said, I am hoping that George Gascon is a one-term DA. I don't think they're going to be able to recall him again. And I hope that we can move on from this, this period. You know, there is a pretty big turnover going to happen in the LA County Board of Supervisors. You have currently two, let's call them moderates, on the Board of Supervisors. And then you have three fairly progressives. And Sheila Kuehl, of course, has opted not to run for her third term. The rumor is, and again, I don't have this confirmed, but the rumor is that she received a target letter from the FBI, and that's why she isn't returning to public service after this term. I do know she's under public corruption investigation by the FBI, but you know, it is what it is. I don't know why she didn't run, but I understand it was because of a target letter. So we have two people running. We have Bob Hertzberg, who's a former assemblyman, and then we have a woman named Lindsay Hovath, who's a very progressive woman. And you know, if Bob gets elected, that will shift the whole way the board operates. It'll give the power to the moderates. And then we'll see probably quite a bit of changes here. You know, the tragedy of all of this is, you know, we'll find out in November whether we have Alex Villanueva as our sheriff, which I think everybody who's law enforcement oriented and safety oriented wants, or we have this guy named Robert Luna, who's just going to do whatever the Board of Supervisors wants, which means that there will be chaos here in Los Angeles. And you know, there's a lot of rhetoric.
Real quick, why on earth, like, I'm so baffled by this. When you're talking about a district attorney who is in these policies that are pushed through that are putting an amount of money that criminals are allowed to steal from stores, what on earth is driving at the heart of that? That cannot just be a decision made out of the blue.
It's a California law. It's
right,
a California.
But why?
First of all, it's California.
What drives at the heart of that?
You know,
I don't understand.
I can't answer that. I always say, you know, people ask me similar questions. It doesn't make sense to me. This is not the America that we live in, that we're raising our children in, is not the America that our grandfathers fought in World War II for. It's not that America anymore. And what I mean by that is that the statesmen, the thinkers, the great political thinkers, you know, we call them the framers. We don't have that anymore. We have a bunch of radicals on both sides, and it's it's hurting us. You know, I always tell people, you want to have a huge reality check, sit down in the morning with MSN News and try to read it to your kids. And it's murder, it's theft, it's shooting, it's car accidents, it's I hate the sheriff, I hate the firemen, riots. You can't read the news to your kids anymore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, it's indicative of a change in society. And we, you know, it's got to change. It's got to change. And part of that big change is holding our elected officials accountable for integrity. And that's, you know, that's kind of, I wish I could be golfing. You know, I'm 47 years old. I want to golf on the weekend, not be sitting there putting evidence together and explaining evidence as to why Sheila Kuehl did not understand that giving her best friends, you know, $1 million worth of contracts may not be very ethical. I mean, my 4-year-old can come up with that, you know? Yeah. So it's challenging. You know, and we see it in not just politics, we see it in education. You know, we just have these reports where our education or math and science nationally has just plummeted. Well, you know, everybody's like the pandemic. Well, California schools have been back in session for a year. They're going on their second year in person. You got to stop blaming people and start saying, oh, yeah, you know, we may have made a mistake here and let's go ahead and correct it. You know, Sheila Kuehl and Patty Giggins keep saying, oh, it's Jennifer Lowe. That happens to me and my wife. It's Jennifer Lowe's fault. Jennifer Lowe is unhappy. Rather than saying, you know, Jennifer Lowe didn't have the opportunity to sign a contract. It was Philip Washington, our FAA nominee, who was going to sign the contract. So stop, you know, my message to the LA County supervisors, to elected officials, stop blaming everybody else and take accountability, you know. And it's like having children, you know. I don't, you know, my son and my daughter look at each other and go, I didn't break the vase. It wasn't me. It must have been you, Dad, you know? So it's, right, it's that kind of stuff. And we need statesmen. We need people who are going to run this country in a way that's fair, in a way that's constitutional, in a way that's compassionate and ethical. And we don't have that. We haven't had it for a long time. And the bickering and the fighting, it's got to stop.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And I think that that's fundamental to get back to basics, to get back to where we came from. Give everybody, before we end and go to break at 5, give everybody a little bit about yourself, what you're doing next, what you're excited for, a little plug-in about where they can find you, where people can connect with you.
So you can connect with us at the ateamadvocacygroup.com, and I'm Adam at ateamadvocacygroup.com. What's next? We have, we're turning our attention to our brand new superintendent here in Los Angeles, who about 3 months before I was hired here, got caught stealing, misusing $6.2 million of Miami-Dade County money that was supposed to go to driver's ed and special ed. He also was involved with covering up 17 teachers who got fired for sexually assaulting and raping children. So that's kind of where we've got our head right now. But, you know, we have, there's another public corruption scandal here in LA where one of the LA County supervisors gave $2 million to a guy who just got out of federal prison for financial fraud a couple months ago to stop gentrification. So there's some really good stuff coming out, and we're going to keep plugging away and making sure that we hold these people accountable. And, you know, we'll do the research, we'll put everything together, and we turn it over to the cops. And whether it's LAPD, the FBI, Homeland Security, or the sheriffs, or the DA, we keep going. And, you know, most of our cases do get investigated.
Well, that's great to hear, everybody. That was Adam Lowe, one of the leading experts in public corruption in Los Angeles. I think that Los Angeles is such an interesting place because you can really see the left's agenda come to fruition there first. You can see it in Canada first with Justin Trudeau and what he's doing right now. You can see it in Los Angeles. I mean, I'm from New York. You can see it in New York as well. Anyways, we are going to go to break in a little bit. I am joined next by Scott Spachek. Originally, I think I'm saying his name right. I think it's either Scott Spachek or Scott Spakak. I will ask him when he comes on next. He's originally from Cleveland. He's lived in China for most of the last two decades, working as a technology executive, investor, and advisor. We are on with Scott after the break.